Because if you think about it, bruv, we ain't getting played.
Mm-mm. No.
On the stations. If I was, you know, somebody else, you know, I would be getting played on Radio 1 and Capital and Kiss and Heart and Smooth and all these stations.
Mm.
Even Hello Darling don't get played on Smooth and Heart and Capital Gold.
That's bonkers, isn't it?
That's what I'm saying. So certain of the tunes them get played. You know, you don't even hear Silly Games, Janet Kay, or I'm So Sorry. It's like we always have to struggle to be on on the playing field, no matter what we do.
Yeah. UK hip-hop was synonymous for that struggle. Like,
yeah.
You know, it's like... You become numb to it, almost like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like Rodney P and all these guys. Mm. You know, talented guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, why is it always a struggle?
Struggle, yeah.
This is what I don't understand. And it's like, you know, somebody like, oh, Ed, we used to do busting.
Yeah.
And he gets a
Ed
break.
Ed Sheeran.
Gets a break and now he's on the mainstream. But there's so much guys that I know that are great singers like Ed. Killer Keller podcast. Killer Keller official.com.
Street Culture TV.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller podcast.
Yo, ladies and gentlemen, Killer Keller podcast, live and direct, central London, or as central as you need to be, plan to be. You don't want to be anywhere else, trust me. Get yourselves ready for the upcoming HODL Wars. It's time to graph punks up and get up with some NFT gaming. Also, big shout out to Chief Rocker Gear, from streets to stage. Chief Rocker is the streetwear of champions. And if you want more, you can go to the Kellervision app, free download iPhone, Android, for all your street culture sports. This is the place to be. And today we have an OG in the building, Saxon Original. Hello, darling. He's here. From Black Eyed Peas to The Skints to his latest book. We'll get more into that. It's an autobiography. We're going to talk deeper into it. The mighty, iconic Tipperary in the building.
Hello, sir. Maximum respect, sir. You've done this before, haven't you?
Oh, my goodness.
You've done this before. You sound like a pro, mate. You sound like a pro.
Some people could actually tell the yarning I go through and try to make sense of a guest. With you, it's always been a constant in our lives as Tipperary.
Boy, it's been 40 years now.
40 years?
Yeah, so I guess I do qualify as an OG.
You're OG.
But yeah, 40 years, man, since, you know, my made my first tune, The Opposite, when I was 17. I am 58 now. So that's a lot
of celebration going on there.
Yeah. So
looking well, my brother. Looking.
Thank you, man. I'm trying. I just come from the old gym. I just had a little swim, a little steam, a little sauna. I try to do that as much as I can. It's hard sometimes when you're traveling, but I got a little membership at this gym. I won't give them no plugs. you know what I mean? And they've got them all over the country. So wherever I'm performing or working, I'll go there. It's like I knew I was going to come see you today. So I leave early, make sure I get my swim and then steam and whatever, and then come do the work.
We all love those disciplines. It must be being Tipperary and having that, you know, 58 years old, man. Like, you know, a lot of people, you know, and salute everybody that's got a hard day job like the rest of us, but, you know, they'd quite happily just sit down. Do you think your career actually determines that necessity to stay on top of your game?
Yeah, you definitely. I mean, for me, it's like it's just important because you come first, you know, because without your health and your well-being, you know, nothing can't go on and nothing can't work.
Mm.
So I just try, you know, my best to just try to keep myself as healthy as possible. I mean, every now and then, like at Christmas, birthdays, New Year's, and
envelope opening, anything really.
Yeah, you have a little drink, a little tipple, and whatever. But most of the time, I try to just tone it down and try to keep myself as healthy as possible. But for my career, it's very important to be on top of things, and I've always been like that. I like to be on time, you know. I like to treat people with respect. I like to, you know, and I think these things, you know, stand you in good stead in your career and for the future. You know what I mean? So I like to treat people like how I like to be treated myself. And, you know, I think those principles have kind of helped me with my career. Sometimes you make a mistake, you might mess up, you might, you know, put your foot in it one and two times, which we all do. But most of the time, I'm pretty squeaky clean. Mm. There's not much rock and roll stories with Tipper Irie. But, I mean, I got a new book out, and it's called Stick to My Roots.
Bong, bong, come on!
And,
need no biography.
And in my book, it basically tells the journey and tells everything, the nooks and the crannies of when my parents came to left Jamaica, them growing up in Jamaica, basically, and then leaving Jamaica, coming to England, having me, my two sisters, and us growing up in the UK, dealing with Margaret Thatcher, Brixton riots, whatever you want to call it, all these things. Yeah. And then from there, it just goes through, travels through the journey of me growing up as a youth and then becoming a musician, Saxon, Top of the Pops, Hello Darling, the success of that and what it's done to change my life. And then, you know, takes me into Lover's Rock, Jungle, being an entrepreneur, and then the conclusion. So that's me. You know, I mean, the story's all in there. If people want to, you know, check it out, they can find out all about what I'm doing.
So long in your career. I mean, you know, this is another conversation. You've just written a book. Like, I guess sometimes you're like, is this going to be another interview? what were you going to ask me?
Yeah.
It's like, what, you know.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's like, you know, I don't mind telling my story and speaking about how it all happened for me. You know what I mean? Because my dad had a little sound system in South London, in Brixton, and he was a sound man. So I grew up within the sound system culture because my dad was a sound man.
Incredible. What's the sound?
It was called Musical Messiah. Mm. Musical Messiah. You know what I mean? But anyway, that was the name of his sound. So he had his sound, and every Friday and Saturday, he used to keep blues dances, parties, house parties. And so I grew up with listening to him playing U-Roy, Big Ute, Dillinger, Trinity, Tapazuki, all these old school guys from Jamaica. And Jim Reeves as well, country and western, because you know country and western is big in Jamaica.
Yeah, yeah.
So listening to that stuff. And then from there, he kind of, he introduced me, you know, to Bob Marley, Dennis Brown, Gregory Isaac, all the classic artists from Jamaica. Mm. But he also rented the rooms to bands, like The Real Thing. You know, you to me are everything, the sweetest song that I can sing. You might know that.
Yeah,
shit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a big tune.
Yeah.
But those guys used to rehearse in my dad's basement.
Wow.
So I kind of just grew up
with it around.
With it around everywhere. So it's just music. So on weekends, it was house parties. And then in the week, the bands, different bands will come in, rock bands, hip hop, whatever. You know, would come in and rehearse. And so I just grew up amongst the music 24/7, and you know, so it was kind of inevitable that I would become a musician. It's just the path that I took was like listening to U-Roy, falling in love with them guys. And then there was people like Brigadier Jerry, Charlie Chaplin, Josie Wells, all of the MCs, them cultural MCs from Jamaica. Listening to them guys, it just made me want to become an MC.
So I find artists like yourself interesting because you grew up with music as not only a lifestyle, but as a commodity through your family.
Yeah.
Your relationship with music is far more precious, far more personable, because you know the power that it can yield in financial support and your own upbringing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, because my dad, you know, my dad was a greengrocer. That was the day-to-day thing. But then he kind of taught me how to be a little entrepreneur, because they had that hustling mentality, what they had from Jamaica. So my dad was a farmer, you know. And then when he came to the UK, he became a greengrocer. So he used to take me to the market, used to, you know, buy the stuff, this, that, bring it back to the shop. Then I used to have to stay in the shop, sell to the customers, just normal retail stuff. Yeah. But then on the weekends, obviously, we would charge people to come into the house parties. Then we'd cook food, we'll sell the food. Then they'll be...
In the house,
yeah.
We'd have a bar and everything.
Yeah. We had a bar and everything. So I kind of learned about, you know, a small little entrepreneurship from a very, very young age and the hustling mentality. So we just keep that. I've just kept that going basically throughout my career because you have to kind of make people make money too. You know, that's why a lot of artists, you know, they, you know, that's why I have, you know, tried to find a good manager, you know, a good agent and, you know, and good team of people around you because once, and if you work hard, and they're making money, they're going to work hard to push
harder,
to get you to where you need to get to. So you can't, you know, and I've learned that even hanging around, you know, huge artists like the Black Eyed Peas or whoever, you kind of see things and sometimes you think, why is he spending all this money on this or why is he spending on that? But there's a method behind the madness, you know what I mean? And sometimes, you know, if you do that, you know, you put out, it comes back tenfold.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Even if it's at the risk of your own...
This is it. Sometimes, because it's risky, but that's life. Sometimes I go places and I say, you know what? I'm going to pay my own fare and I'm just going to go. Mm. You know, and I might go to America and I go and sleep on my friend's couch. That's how I got the opportunity to work with will.i.am and the Black Eyed Peas. I was doing a little tour of the West Coast of America and... It was $7 to get in, you know, 200 people at the gig. And I was sleeping on my mate's couch, you know what I mean? Not because I had to, because it was convenient. Mm-hmm. So he said, "Tip, no, just come, don't stay in the hotel, come stay with me." Mm-hmm. So I went, stayed with him. And then I went to do the gig. And then this girl was there. She was like, "Tip, you know what? They're looking for will.i.am them. They must have heard me. I think I did a tune with this guy called Motivate, who's like a DJ. And will.i.am must have heard the tune." So and he just said, like, "Is this guy in, you know, is he in America at the moment?" And she said, "Yeah." So they called me. So I just said, "Oh, okay, I'll go and check it out." Because at that time, they weren't huge.
No.
They never had no, you know, no big tune or nothing like that.
They were still on the, they were kindling with something,
like,
weren't they?
Yeah, they were like underground. Well, still, they had a few stuff going on. I think they had like a little ad with Dr. Pepper.
Yeah.
And they were still big with the
underground
hip-hop scene. But there was nowhere the love and all of these tunes weren't happening.
They were still in there with your project at the time.
Yeah. They were still in there doing their... Well, I think they just got the deal with Interscope.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So I just went down there and they played me the tune. I met Will and he said, "Oh, this is the tune." So I'm kind of quick, but I thought to myself, you know what? Let me take it to where I'm staying and just write. And so that's what I did. So I took the tune, went back to where I was staying. I think I was staying in this place called Laverne, which is like east of LA.
Yeah.
And I just went back and I just started to write. Cutie, make sure you move your booty, shake that thing. And I just kind of wanted to make something that Americans could relate to thing, shorty. So I just kind of used words what they use.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I just went back there and I just knocked it out in about an hour, as you do. And he's like, "Okay, I'm going to give you this much money and I'm going to give you this much publishing." So I'm like, "Okay, that's fair enough. Cool." And I just left it at that. You know, you move on to the next project. And then I was at home in Streatham, Strathreven.
How many months later? Like,
this
year?
Was like maybe about 6 months. 6 months later.
This is the beauty of music.
Yeah.
This is just...
About 6 months later, maybe 7 months later, I'm sitting at home and I turn the TV on and I see, where is... Dun, 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 dun. And I thought, okay.
Mm.
This looks like something's going to happen here. And then next thing I knew, the tune went to number one. So I thought, I wonder if my tune's going to be a single.
Well, the mind boggles, doesn't it?
Yeah. And then next thing you know, it was a single. And I got the call. "Tipper, we want you to come to Hollywood." I'm like, "I think I can do that."
Yeah, I think I've got time.
So, yeah. So next thing you know, I went out there, done the video, and the tune was top 10. all over the world, and I ended up going on tour with them, you know what I mean, which was cool. You know what I mean? It was nice to kind of see how the other half live, you know what I mean? Done Glastonbury, supported Paul McCartney, done some big shows with them. Do you know what I mean?
God. It just makes it warms my heart to know that these things happen like that.
These things, so sometimes you got to cut in. Anyway, the moral of the story is you need to make it, you have to make your own luck sometimes in music. And a lot of the times I go and I do things and I think, is this the right thing to do? But, you know what, let's just go and see what happens. And a lot of the time, something good happens. Mm. It's just like today, you called me. I thought, you know what? I'm flying out tomorrow. But anyway, let's do it.
Well, thank you. Can't see Killer Keller.
Killer Keller.
That's it. Come on.
It's Killer Keller. Come on.
But it just warms my heart, like I said. And moreover, we all do these things, like being here, you know, so early on into 2024. And it'd be quite easy to be like, going to LA, sleeping on a sofa. I mean, it's the you know, the archetype music moment in anybody's career. You know, living the dream.
No, well, it's not like. But this is, I'm saying, I mean, people think sometimes that we're living this fantastic life, but you know, me throwing a stone, going to LA to do these small little shows on the West Coast. And then something huge happened.
Seismic.
Which, you know, I got nominated for a Grammy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so from sleeping on the couch just for that project, you know, or just to go and do some shows.
Yeah.
The next thing, you know, Puma's paying for my chauffeur, my limo, my clothes, my this, my that, to go to the Grammys. And I'm sitting next to Jay-Z, Beyonce, and, you know, all these people. And that's from me taking a risk of going to LA to do these shows. I might have grossed maybe $4,000 or $5,000 for the whole little trip. You know what I'm saying? Which is not much. But it turned out that tune kept me in work for at least 4 years.
An extra 4 years on what you had anticipated.
That's right.
On a prolific level.
On a huge level, because I was doing, we supported like Britney Spears, Mary J. Blige, Korn. We were supporting rock groups, Korn, all these huge rock groups. You know, it was, you know, Sugar Babe, Aswad, whatever. There were some huge festivals anyway.
Incredible.
So music, you don't know what's around the corner. That's why I say to the young artists, them, just keep going. If you believe in yourself, you only need one, you know? You just need one tune to give you that spring or that step that you need to keep you. If you look at people, you know, people like General Levy, it's like he's known for Incredible.
Yeah.
Sister Nancy, she's known for Bam Bam.
Tiny Temper.
Yeah.
You know?
But... You know, so there's loads of people. They've got, obviously, they've made other tunes and they've had tunes that would be, but when you hear General Levy, you think, Incredible. When hear Tipper Irie, you think, Hello, Darling.
Yeah.
When you know, Sweet Top Cat, you think, My Love, Miss Sess. Or, you know, it's so you got to just strive for that, to get that tune.
Yeah.
That one, because it can only take one. And then obviously you just build on that, try to build on that one.
You had a life of many lives, though. And this is actually cited more recently with Busta Rhymes when he...
Yes.
You know, we grew up on sound.
Yeah.
We grew up on sound. Like, you had sound, you had Hello, Darling.
Yeah.
You had the Black Eyed Peas, which was like a resurgence of, you know, of its source.
Well, it's keeping yourself... It's like... I guess it's kind of like reinventing yourself, but it's like from the sound system culture, from Saxon... I was just surrounded by so many talented people. Mm. If you think Maxi Priest, you know, who was like, he's like a huge lovers rock or singer just in general.
But there was only a few of you.
Yeah, and then there was Smiley Culture.
Yeah.
That was about as well, that got into the pop charts with Police Officer.
That's right.
And then Papa Levi was huge in Jamaica because he had a tune called My God, My King, which was number one in Jamaica, which was the first UK artist ever to become have a number one tune in Jamaica. And then there's loads of other singers like Roger Robin.
They were ducking in and out almost.
Yeah, they were all
rotation.
You know, people were, you know, in the sound. So it's like the sound system culture. And then, you know, there's a lot of like lovers rock artists that I've worked with that I've had number one tunes with in the reggae charts. You know, people like Lloyd Brown, Peter Huntingale, Winsome, Janet Lee Davis, you know, Peter Spence. All these, you know, I mean, your fan base might not know some of
Google
these names.
That, get that down.
Yeah, you got all the names there. Google them. Right there. Excellent singers. But in the reggae charts, I've had about 3-4 number one tunes in the reggae charts with these artists. So from the sound system culture, I've also tapped in to another field, which is more like lovers rock field. But then I've also been in the roots field with Mad Professor, you know, which is more like Iration Steppers, Channel One, Jayu, all these kind of different sound systems. And so for me, it's just music, bruv. You know, I just make music. So, you know, if I feel it, I go with it. So, you know, and a lot of the time, you know, it can be detrimental, I think, sometimes, because I'm not really within a niche, if you understand what I mean. You could say that I'm in the dancehall field, but then I'm kind of in that field, and then I'm kind of in the lovers rock, and then I'm kind of in the
what
jungle.
Kind of like spreading yourself thinly.
Yeah.
That kind of mindset.
I think sometimes when people book me, it's like if I'm doing a festival, you know what I mean? I can entertain, and there's 10,000 people out there.
Yeah.
I smash up the place.
Yeah.
If I go to a club and, you know, there's 300 people in there, you smash up the place. But if you put on a Tipper Irie gig and just say, like, I'll have just Tipper Irie, sometimes because my thing is so diverse, you know, you might not get the numbers when I play by myself, because I think I'm in too much different. I don't know if you get what I mean.
I know exactly.
I'm in too much different piles. So sometimes it can be difficult to promote one of my shows. You know what I mean? I don't know. I
know exactly what you're trying to say, because I suffered the same fate with beatboxing.
Yeah,
like
okay.
I can do this genre, this genre, this genre, this genre.
Okay.
And, you know, so you go and do a drum and bass thing in association with a drum and bass DJ.
Yeah.
Or you do a thing associated with a hip-hop DJ.
Yeah.
But when you come to do it on your own, it's like, okay, what? So I've got 20 minutes to beatbox. What am I doing?
What?
How do I sustain that?
Well, this is what I'm saying. So it's like, it's not easy. People think it's easy road out there, but you have to find your place and then try and work with it. But with me, because I think I've been so diverse with jungle, with dancehall, with lovers rock, with roots, with, you know, there's a load of different spaces where
high-class problems here, ladies and gentlemen. You know what it is, though? I think people, what they buy into, particularly promoters, I think, is the recipe, the idea, you're on brand.
Yeah.
You're your brand.
Yeah.
And that's it's almost like the spectacle of that first, and the authenticity of how far down the history chain you know, and what you embody.
Yeah.
They say, and how do you recreate that in a 30-minute showcase?
It's difficult, because sometimes I go to shows and think, oh, for God's sake, what am I going to do tonight? Or which tunes am I going to do? You know what I mean? You kind of work it out, but then sometimes you can't work it out. Because I would go to a hardcore jungle rave, and I might be on the bill. I'm not on a lot of those jungle bills, but... And I'd think, you know, okay, then I'll sort out a couple of little tunes what I've done with Decline and a couple of other different people, you know. And then I'll be there and I'll be finished and be like, are you going to sing Hello Darling? Do you know what I mean? And I'm thinking, like, are you serious? You kids want me to sing that tune. And
down everything to a regular pace, not drum and bass.
Not drum and bass, no. This is what I'm saying, because they've obviously gone online, checked you out, and they love that tune. They want you to sing it. So, but you would not think that...
That's incredible.
...that they would want me to sing that tune because it's my signature tune, so they want you to sing it. You know, so you ended up... You know, so it's different, man. It's not easy.
You need remixes of your tunes.
Yes,
that's the ticket.
That's the ticket. That could be another, you know, thing that I could do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Have you ever had the? I mean, because you know you're an international traveller. You see.
Yeah.
You
know, back to Jamaica tomorrow.
Do you know what I'm saying?
So my heart goes out to you, bro.
It must be really hard out here in the rain.
Yeah.
But when does you know, from amphitheatres to, you know, to small clubs to, well, a great example is what you mentioned about Black Eyed Peas. And, and when does it all become normalised? Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, yeah, I'm going to go on now. Okay, yeah, Jay-Z's in the audience. Yes, fine. I'll be all right. Yeah. And when's that going to get normalised?
No, I mean, for me, it's just another day. That's what I call it. It's another day at the office. You know what I mean? And the thing is to just do it. You know what I mean? Just go in. So for me, no matter what the show is, whether how big or small, from I know that I'm going on that stage, I'm going to give 100% because it leads to, you never know who's watching and you never know where it's going to take you. So I just, you know, so for me, it is kind of a normal way of life. It's been my life for like 40 years. So it's like another day at the office for me. I know I'm that way. It's like today, I was on my way to the gym and I said, and then I saw your message. So instead of going to that gym, I diverted. I drove straight here. You know what I mean? Park up, do my little thing, and I'm on time, 2 o'clock. So that's kind of how I am. You know what I mean? If I know I got things to do and the stage, I like to prepare. I make sure I know what I'm doing. And then you go and you attack.
Man of honour to the craft. See, that's what it's about.
Yeah, you have to, you know, take it serious. Some people them don't take the thing serious. They're not in it, you know. You got to. That's how I feel anyway, and I think that's why I've stayed successful because I just take it serious and I respect my job and I love my job. I don't just do it for the money. I obviously I need the money to survive, but I actually have a deep passion for what I do, and I think because of that, that's why now I'm still going.
Life with a purpose.
Yeah.
Like tools that you've been given from them upstairs.
Yeah, but you use, you know, it's like anything, you know, if you practice, it's like you're what you do, you know what I mean? You got to practice, you know what I mean? What you do is unique, so but you still have to perfect your craft. And that's what I do, you know, if I know that I've got something to do, I make sure I prepare. So, because sometimes people want you to sing songs that you haven't sung for ages. Is like the I did a tune with Peter Spence called Girl and My Best Friend. We done like a cover version of one of them old songs and I hadn't sung it for years because obviously his song is the cover version but my parts are original. So then you have to go and rehearse and bring it back to your memory. So I cut it on in the car. I have it on my headphone. I go when I'm swimming, you know, I'll be practicing the
lyrics. So your recall's quick.
So it's on it. So it's on it. And then you know, so it's just preparation. What is it you prepare to succeed or
prepare to fail?
There you go.
Sort of thing. Okay, so on that note then, let's go through, because I had the privy recently, rest in peace, Leke Aerosol, clothing, good friend of ours.
Yeah.
Had the privy of performing alongside you, which
you did, sir. We touched up the place, yeah, man.
It was the moment like that. We were quiet, louder.
Yeah.
I didn't see any sort of, I don't know, there wasn't any pre-prep vocal acrobatics. No, you just went straight. Give me a scenario. What goes through your head?
Yeah.
58-year-old Tipperary. Yeah. We're not talking about early now. We're talking about what has been the constant in your preparation for performing?
Wow. I mean, preparation-wise, I guess...
Like from backstage, from that 30 seconds of...
Yeah. No, I don't think I've got anything in particular. So this, I'm saying, from I know that I'm healthy, I'm well, I haven't got a cold, I don't, you know, and I know that I'm, you know, if we're going to do something and I'm healthy... I just, you know, if it's only if I'm not sure about the lyric, but it's like what we did was just an improv. It's just an improvisation. So it's just doing something what you'd normally spit and just, and basically sitting on the rhythm, which was at that time is you.
Yes.
So basically, you know what I'm saying? So for me, preparing is just knowing what I've got to do or what I'm gonna do. Sometimes you don't know. Sometimes it's on the spur of the moment. You know what I mean? But because you've been doing it so long, you know, is just something, I guess, that's in you. You know what I mean? You know, been doing it forever. You know, kina keda. You never, or forever, or whenever. You know what I mean? So it's just the words just come because obviously you, because I've been doing it so long, you know, freestyle for me is pretty easy because at the end of the day, there's so much, you know, it's just knowing words that's going to move. It's just like watching Supernatural or somebody like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? So it just takes a key, you know what I mean? The remedy is the key the policy.
He's
the,
OG.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So it's like, and things like that I would do, you know what I mean? As a, you know, like watching somebody like him, you know what I mean? Then I think, oh, I can do that.
Love that. Doesn't that inspire you when you see people really nail that?
That's right.
Sort of stuff.
Yeah. So if somebody can do that, then I think I can do that. And then I'd go home and I'd just look at things in the room and then look at your laptop and, you know, and say something about that. And the plastic bottle, the kettle, the cameras, the this, the, and then it kind of triggers your brain and your brain gets used to doing those kind of things. And freestyle is like that. You see something, it's just the word before. To let you know, right, it's going to rhyme with that or whatever. And so preparation, you know, to really answer your question, I don't really have a real particular way of preparing backstage. It's just relax. I know what I'm doing. You know, sometimes, obviously, if it's my set, then obviously you got your set. So you look at the set and you think, okay, I'm going to do that, 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 that. But then things happen while you're on stage.
Right.
And then you've got to improvise because you're on stage. Or it might be somebody in the crowd or whatever that does something and then it takes you to another place.
Yeah.
Or you go out there and you think, well, they're not really feeling these tunes. And then you try to switch it up.
Yeah.
Or I would be thinking about, if I don't think the crowd or I'm working the crowd enough or I'm not getting the feedback, then I would switch it up lyric-wise or to try to do something to get them on board.
Back,
I don't know
back
if that makes sense.
It makes complete and utter sense. It takes a life to have that intuition, doesn't it, in your music?
Yeah, because it's like making a mistake, isn't it? If you make a mistake, you know you've made a mistake.
But they don't. Yeah.
So the art of performing is to, you know, you're going to have the hardcore fans and think, oh, he's got that wrong.
The song don't go like that.
But it's live. So you're not expected to get the tune exactly 100% how it always is all the time when you're live, when you're playing with a band. If I'm doing a PA or a personal appearance, then obviously 9 times out of 10 you're going to do the tune structurally. But if you're working, if you're doing it live with my musicians, then it gives you more room to improvise and stuff like that. So
because they're jamming it out with you and it's a vibe.
Yeah, and you can just, if you get tired, you can say drums. You can say bass, you know what I mean? Or drum and bass, or just rhythm, and then the keyboards and the guitarist will play.
So you play with a whole band?
Yeah, full band.
How many ensemble?
It's 6 musicians. So drum, bass, guitar, keyboards, and 2 horns.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I'd have a full band. Like when I did Reggae Land at Milton Keynes recently, and that's full. In fact, I had 2 keyboard players at that.
But that was fun.
It's amazing. So though, you know, I play with full bands. Sometimes I do like a hip-hop show, straight hip-hop show with just me and my DJ. Mm-hmm. But most of the times I go out with a live band.
Who's your DJ?
Mark Ross, the Boss.
Oh, nice.
Don't know if you've heard of Mark.
Oh, no. We're Googling again, aren't we?
Mark Ross, the Boss, is my DJ at the moment. But I've got a couple of people that I work with. There's Keith Lawrence from My Soul, Mark Ross, the Boss. Victor V is a DJ, that one of the DJs from that used to play with Saxon. I think he still plays with Saxon, actually.
Wow.
So there's a couple of DJs that I use, but it's mainly Mark. Well, at the moment, it's Mark Ross.
Nice. Moving swiftly, sacrifice, because a life in music, you know, we're talking like a career's worth.
Yes.
You know, the ebbs and flows. I mean, you spoke of Margaret Thatcher. I mean, you know, the sound system lifestyle is way different to you know, a Black Eyed Peas or a band ensemble.
Yeah.
Sacrifice. life isn't normal for artists, is it?
No, because, you know, when I was growing, when I had my first son when I was 18, you know, and then after that, I was on the road a lot, constantly, like maybe four or five times a week,
mm-hmm.
especially when Saxon, when Saxon took off, it was like literally like the Beatles.
Rocket.
You know, it was like
stratosphere. Yeah.
So everywhere we went, there were just girls, herb, drink, everything. That was like a rock and roll kind of vibe. You know what I mean? So because everywhere we went, it was sold out. You know what I mean? So I had Micah, then I had Raphael, then I had Cash. I didn't learn, and then I got caught again. And I had my daughter when so my son is 40, my eldest son, and my other son is 38, 35, and my daughter is 27.
Wow.
So they're all adults now, big people doing their thing, and I got my life back again.
Bless you.
I've got my life, but I had my life anyway because the mums dealt with the kids because I've got four kids for four different women.
And you're just bringing in the money. You're bringing in the money to help.
So yeah. Obviously you're there for them and you contribute and you're there as much as you can. But, you know, I'm not going to lie. My life was on the road, making music, you know, up and down, traveling constantly because we was out four or five times a week. And then as soon as the Saxon thing, not to say that it died down because it's still happening today, but the tunes came. And then, you know, Tipper Irie and the Colonel, Just a Speak, got to number two. Then I had Good to Adefini and the Bears. Then I had The Complaint Neighbor. And then Hello Darling came out. And then
blew
the doors open. And then from there, you know, it just kept traveling. Because I'd done the most of the countries in the Caribbean. I toured 52 states of America, you know what I mean? Then you go into Africa, you go into Australia, you go into, you know, Asia and, you know, then South America, places like Brazil, Mexico.
And the girlfriends love it. They love the idea of you being out in the sun
they're in acne.
World's smallest violin playing here, you know.
You know, it was I've had a good life, bro. I'm not gonna lie. I have had a blast, you know. If the father keep me here, let me knock wood or something.
Knock that wood.
I knock wood and this and whatever. You know what I mean? I've had a good run, you know, but the sacrifice obviously is that I wasn't able to see my sons them, you know, do certain things. You know what I mean? What fathers are supposed to be there at. I was in America somewhere. Mm. I was here, there, and everywhere.
No Zoom, you know. None of that. No social media or FaceTime.
Nothing like that. Crazy. None of that. So for me, you know, that was a sacrifice that I had to do because I didn't get to see my kids them grow up as much as I'd like. I mean, obviously, when you come home from road or whatever, you get to see them, but there's a lot of things that you're gonna miss.
Do you get a PTSD as well when you come back off such a long stint on tour? I hear these stories like Bono from U2 would like check himself in to his own hotel, of course, but you know, he'd check in for like 2 weeks because he knew it to acclimatize to not being on the road. It's unhealthy lifestyle.
Yeah.
Right?
No, it's not as easy and glamorous as what people think because, you know, if you're driving from New York to Las Vegas, that's like 2 days, maybe three. So the agent, and then if you got an agent that's messed up the tour, because you're going through the tour and it's all easy and then you reach New York and then when you're looking at the schedule, you're thinking, that's Vegas? It's like, why has he done that?
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
But it's already booked. So you're on the road with these people and then musicians, you know, they ain't got their weed or they ain't got this.
All it takes is one thing to trigger. And it's on.
We're going to drive for 3 days. Like, yeah, mate. Because, well, how did that happen? I don't know, mate. You need to speak to the manager. You know what I mean? And then you're in the van for 3 days. So you stop off, you drive and stop off. And they're pissed off because they ain't making any money or they ain't this, that. So it's not an easy road. As much as like I said, I've had a good run and I've been grateful, so grateful for my career. But it's been hard. You know, and you got put in the hard work and the hard graft to be in a position where I am now, where I'm pretty comfortable.
That's what they don't see in it. That's what they don't see.
No, they don't see that graph. They just see you on stage and they think, oh, everything's lovely, lovely. And then, you know, the guitarist ain't got his weed, so he's miserable. And you got to sit in a van with him for the next...
Side fills aren't quite to the moon and the stars.
You know what I mean? So it's like, it's not all a bed of roses, but, you know, I'm still grateful, bro. I could be doing something that... mixing cement or something that I don't like.
Yeah, absolutely. I get you.
I'm not really complaining. It's just how it is. It's just the music industry. You have a lot of people that are positive, but then you have people that are negative, as you know, and then you have people that are just assholes.
Yeah.
And then you got people that, but there's a lot of good people out there. Mm. You know what I mean? Good people. And I've come across a lot of good people that's helped me with my career.
In unsuspecting places as well.
You don't know. You never know who you're going to buck up on. But sometimes the least, you know, when you least expect it, you know what I mean, something good happens. You know what I'm saying? And music has a way of doing that for me. I've been lucky that way. You know, when I've never really had a time where... I think I did a day job for 6 months.
6 months? What were you doing?
Yeah, I was working in a record shop.
Wait.
Back to music.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, I worked in a record shop. No, I tell a lie. I was working in a record shop. I worked in Red Records in Brixton.
Wicked. Of course, absolutely.
Yeah, opposite Brixton station. I worked there. Phil gave me a job there. And that was even after, that was way after, I think that was in the, I don't know if it was in the middle of the 90s or something. After the success of the 80s. And then it just got on my nerves because people were coming to shop with me.
Steve Irie,
what are you doing in here? I was like, I'm working here.
Yeah,
it's a record shop, it's music, you know, and whatever. And then I did driving for BMW, which is basically used to go to their depot, pick up the parts, put it on a van, and then drop it off to... thing. So I did 6 months of working in a record shop and I've done 6 months of that and then I got another hit tune and then that was that.
But in that rest time there, do you feel like the well had refilled so far as prohibit you?
No, because I don't know if you might have noticed, but I'm a simple guy. So for me, you know, so long as my fridge is full, I got a little car to take me from A to B, and I can, you know, and my kids are okay. I'm happy, bro. I'm happy. I'm comfortable now in my life. And, you know, and for me, success is being able to, if I want to book a flight to go on holiday, I can go. If my car needs servicing, I can do
it. Why don't people see life like that? Why don't they see it more often like that?
Yeah, that's still, for me, that's success, bro. If I can get up tomorrow and say, yo, bro, I'm going to, where do I want to go? Okay, I think I'm going to go to Thailand with my sons.
Yeah.
And I'm like, boys, yo, my son's 40th. And I'm like, Mike, got your ticket. He said, a ticket? I said, yeah, we're going to Thailand.
Oh, God, I love that.
You know what I mean?
He goes,
oh. My son works at Sainsbury's. He's a simple guy. You know what I mean? My other son, he does recruiting. My other son is a choreographer. They've all got their little, and I live with my son, my eldest son. Me and him, we got a bungalow and we're there. And like, I'm leaving. I said, Mike, I'm out. He said, okay, Dad, don't worry. I'll take care of everything. and every, you know, the place. So it's how
this
you
crazy dude. You created an ecosystem. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the way.
That's the way to do it. You got to, you know. And I look after my boys, them, and they're good. They're good people. And I've taught them that, you know what I mean? You got, listen, yo, obviously there's left and there's right, you know what I'm saying? Mm. Do the right, bro. Just do the right one, you know what I mean? Systems sometimes can get you down, but you got to just kind of try to take the right road. But for me, I just think that if I can say, yo, I want to go on holiday to get away from England, and I can go, that's a blessing. If I want to change my car, I can change my car if I want to, but I don't. The last car I had, I've had it for 15 years. You know what I mean? Because it was fine.
Yeah.
It's a little BM. It took me from where I went to go.
Totally.
Simple. So for me, that is success, being able to move, being able, my fridge is full, I can move. If I want to take a break, I can do that. You know what I mean? And I'm, my girl at the time, or my girl, now, if I want to treat her, or if we want to go on holiday, if we want to do whatever, I can stand up and I can support. And for me, that's success, man.
That's, you know, beautiful. What
I mean? Having 20 bedrooms, you know, to me, it's like headache more, you know, because they end up, you know, having to downsize.
Yeah.
So for me, that's success, you know what I mean? And right now, I'm in a good place, so I give thanks every day.
I love that. I have seen. Don't you love that? Tiff is doing good. You mentioned the system there, which obviously, you know, likes to play
Babylon.
Tricks. Yes, yeah. Right.
Yeah, one of them. We're getting yeah, political now.
Well, actually, I want to, you know, touch surface on how you remain so playful. How do you retain a sense of play? And for those listening, you'll go into a studio situation, a stage situation, and you know, the turnaround time of dealing with something stressful behind the door, you know, sometimes that can really prolong your creative momentum. It can stop, it can halt things. But for your decades now, you've ever been ever playful. You've resisted from the pressures of these things.
It's difficult, but, you know, because sometimes, like I said before, you know, you do meet arseholes or you do meet people, and then the system is messed up. I was going to swear then, but I guess it's a podcast.
It's your podcast. You know
you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's fucked up, mate. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's like, with all of the stuff what's going on in plain sight.
Yes.
That's what's amazing. It's like...
dumbfounding, isn't it?
Can't you see what the mayor's doing to our city?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, hey guys, hello.
Do you like this up here? A little bit more.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, he's messing it all up.
Yeah.
Guys, when are we going to wake up and say, yo, mate, if you mess up this place, we're coming to see you and your family.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Because you're taking a piss. London, I've lived in London all my life, bruv. Yeah, and obviously, you know, I've stayed in places all over the world, in Caribbean. I got family house in Jamaica. Me and my family's got a house there, and it's a completely different lifestyle. But I've lived in London all my life growing up, and I've seen all the changes and where it's going to now. And they are messing up our city. Turning it into I don't know what. If you look at your driving now, it's like they want everybody on the main road. A lot of the side roads, they've all been cut off. So a journey that would normally take you 5 minutes or 10 minutes, because there's all these streets that you could just normally get to, and you can't get to them no more.
Turned into a rat run, isn't it?
Yeah. So, well, it's not even a rat run. You're just on the main road in a traffic.
20 miles an hour.
Yeah.
We're not moving, really.
And not. So I'm thinking, well, I know why they're doing it, but isn't everybody going to...
Yeah. Are they just... Isn't anyone else going to... Yeah.
Are we... Because obviously we need... It's got to be a collective. It can't just be one guy. Oh, Tipo Irie's over here saying, hey, the mayor's a cunt. You know what I mean? Or, you know what I'm saying? He's fucking up the place. But if you think about it, even the, you know, an ambulance.
Oh, yeah. First thing that crossed my mind when you said it.
Guys.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's sick here and the ambulance could get there in 5 minutes. Mm. But because you've decided to block off all the side roads, the ambulance now has to go this way and go that way.
With all the bumps, all the traffic.
Electric cars, you know, they haven't thought it through.
No.
You know,
the electric car thing's it's so stupid.
It's like they haven't thought it through. Or, you know, when is it going to... They haven't got the infrastructure to make it really work. And so, but I'm just mentioning things, you know. You know what I mean? It's just, bruv, we need to wake up.
Yeah, yeah.
The people that be in this country need to wake up and know what's happening. It's like, you know, all these Matt Hancock and Boris Johnson and all these arseholes, you know, have we all forgotten?
Yeah.
Have they forgotten what, you know, and, you know, when I saw him on, you know, I'm a Celebrity.
Yeah, I can't believe
it's like, really?
Yeah.
It's like, have you not? Have I been somewhere else?
it's like a Black Mirror thing, isn't it? It's so surreal.
I mean, I don't know if this is fucking up your podcast,
not
but
at all.
It's like, you know, it's like, bro, the care homes.
Mm.
You know how much people died, right?
Yeah.
It's
like,
and these guys have robbed all of this money and PPE, and they've stolen all of this, and they've taken all of that. And it's like, nothing happens.
No, nothing. Just completely subdued.
It's like, okay, let's crack on. Like, really?
Yeah.
And so as much as I'm playful and I'm that kind of guy, because I try to be humble, you know what I mean, and being that way, but it's like when things are just happening, you're thinking, what is wrong with the people in this country? Are they just going to wait until it's all in place and then be like, oh...
Didn't see this. What happened?
Do you know what I mean? It's like, I didn't see this coming.
Mm.
It's like, bro, it's happening now.
Yeah.
In front of your eyes. You can't drive nowhere. That's why there's all these temporary lights here, because they're putting everything and whatever there is in place. So, I don't know, bro. I turned to dub plates when the lockdown was on. That's what I was doing, because obviously all the sound systems were at home.
Yeah.
Nobody weren't here. So the man then was cutting all the dubs. So I just set up a dub plate agency with my girlfriend at the time.
What? That's incredible.
And that kept me my income.
That's incredible.
Yeah, you got to make...
Incredible resources.
It's flat for hustle.
Yeah.
We're back to, okay, then I can't do a show. Okay, so I can be in the studio though. So... There's thousands of sound systems. There's thousands of DJs. So set up an agency. And that's what I did. I set up an agency and I contacted General Levy, Carol Thompson, Janet Kay, Peter Huntingdale, all the different artists that, you know, name dropping.
This is incredible.
That you might know. And then I said, yo, bro, can I do a flyer? You know, so I just done a flyer, send them out there. They send in dubs. I pay the artists. I take my commission and I give them their dub.
That's incredible.
So it's just a local, it's like, again, it's that survival. It kicks into survival mode, because that's what we've had to do.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, bro, we ain't getting played.
Mm-mm. No.
On the stations. If I was, you know, somebody else, you know, I would be getting played on Radio 1. And Capital and Kiss and Heart and Smooth and all these stations.
Mm.
Even Hello Darling don't get played on Smooth and Heart and Capital Gold.
That's bonkers, isn't it?
That's what I'm saying. So certain of the tunes them get played. You know, you don't even hear Silly Games, Janet Kay, or I'm So Sorry. Yeah. It's like certain tunes. So this is what I'm saying. It's like, it's even my book, you know, my book's out.
Mm.
And I'm selling the book through Amazon, and I'm selling it through the publishers. They're called Jacawanda.
Mm-hmm.
That's the name of the publishing company. And I'm trying to think of the name of the other people that they sell through. But it's not in W.H. Smith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It blows my mind as well. I mean, Mr. Norsky,
you know, so it's like even in this world, like my brethren there, Jack's got his book.
Mm.
Why can't I go and I'm getting on a flight, you know what I mean, and I'm stop airport, looking around and thinking. So I go to the lady, goes, have you got this book?
Mm.
She goes, have you got this book, Tip O'Hara, Sticks in My Roots? She goes, oh, okay, I'll have a look. She goes, no. So I had some on me. So I goes, it's this book.
Mm.
She goes, oh, wow. And then there was a couple of people that were in the queue. And they went, oh, my God, is that you? I'm like, yeah. She goes, oh, that looks very interesting. Just because of the art. Well, I should have brought my book today, actually. But anyway, it's called Stick to My Roots.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like just art. It's like we always have to struggle to be on the playing field, no matter what we do.
Yeah. UK hip hop was synonymous for that struggle. Like,
yeah.
You become numb to it, almost like, okay.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like Rodney P and all these guys. Mm. You know, talented guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's like, why is it always a struggle?
Yeah.
This is what I don't understand. And it's like, you know, somebody like, oh, Ed, we used to do busting.
Yeah.
And he gets
Ed
a break.
Ed Sheeran.
Gets a break and now he's on the mainstream. But there's so much guys that I know that are great singers like Ed.
Yeah.
And they play great guitar and they sing and da, 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 da. But maybe it's just the music. Even a group like the Skints.
Yeah, yeah. Love the Skints, man.
It's like four-piece band, mixed race girl, three white guys, but they play reggae.
Yeah. And bang out reggae as well. I've seen them. A couple of songs are wicked.
They're getting a fan base. Mm. They got a decent fan base.
Yeah.
But why ain't they in mainstream?
It's like you've got to be aggressive to get anywhere. Like, you've got to be,
you know, the Skints should be, you know, huge.
Yeah.
Because they'll sell out the Grand in Clapham Junction or the Electric in Brixton.
Yeah.
They sold that out the other day. And I think that maybe 800 people.
Oh, see. Right?
But bands
completely
like
off radar as well. Incredibly so. Right?
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, I'm just trying to get to the injustice of the fucking thing.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because groups like that, they're making good music and they're bloody talented. You know, the drummer plays his drums and sings. Marcia can play everything and sing. Joss plays the guitar, but my man plays the bass.
Joss is a great DJ as well.
So it's like good groups like that, but why aren't they getting mainstream exposure that they should be getting because, you know, what is it, the music that they're playing? Is it because it's reggae? Whatever. But it's always, but if it's hip-hop, UK, reggae, UK, it's a struggle.
Yeah, always.
And that's the problem that we have to do. But for me, I'm international.
Yeah, it's such a diversified, I mean, you know, and jungle drum and bass, to be fair. It's true, because what we're talking about here is a dynamic artist, which you are, and you mentioned drum and bass as part of your portfolio.
Yes.
Now, jungle drum and bass have a unique position. I don't think they never succumbed. They stuck to their guns.
Yeah,
they kept in house a lot of
their
core values.
Let a lot of people in because I noticed that because I don't really get that much jungle bookings.
Mm. Smacked it that night though.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, because like Ragga Twins, you know, I'm very good friends with Demon from Ragga Twins.
Yeah, it's a good man.
And he's like, Tip, it's like you just in the scene.
Yeah.
It's like you've just slotted in the scene without being in the scene.
Big up D-Man. Big up Ragga Twins.
Yeah.
Big up everyone that was there. But there was Tip Up being in the venue was like just status was just like, you know who's here? It was that kind of conversation.
It's almost like you're kind of. But I'm just humble, bruv. I'm you know, they asked me, I said, you know what, it's a good thing I'll come. You know what I'm saying? But it's like I just slot in. I can slot into any scene.
Whether it
be garage, jungle, dance or whatever, roots, I know to adjust and adapt to wherever the beat is.
Mm.
I mean, it's just like, I didn't know what you was going to beatbox. I just kind of like, okay, let me try and sit on it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And it worked a charm.
So, you know, so brother, it's not easy, man, but the jungle scene is a good scene. And they've got, they've got solid fan, hardcore fan base. and you know the Ragga Twins and Navigator and all these brethren, them they've managed to sustain a career just like I have in my field. You know what I'm saying? So, but it's always a struggle because I've had hit tunes in the mainstream and I've had many hit tunes in the reggae charts. But, you know, obviously as you get older, the people that are my age are older. So they're not coming out as much as anymore. They've got other responsibilities, other grandkids, this, that, whatever. So it's kind of like now it's reinventing yourself to try to get a younger audience into what we're doing. So that's kind of similar to what General Levy does.
Yeah.
You know, because if you go to a General Levy show, it's not people that look like him that's at the show.
No.
It's young,
especially when you travel to Asia and whatnot, you know, like to see how far the music and culture has gone from these shores right the way through to the other sides.
Yeah.
Another person, actually, a couple of people, actually, I mean, Daddy Freddy. Sweetie Iree, who's managed to...
He's crazy, man.
Crazy.
But he's incredible. Like somebody that is like my, you know, somebody that I admire.
He is so good at reinventing himself.
They call me Godfather, you know what I mean, them guys, you know what I mean? And with Sweetie, you know, obviously he hooked up with the Gorillaz, you know, who are huge.
Yeah.
And he's managed to get into that little niche there, and that's niche. So that's what I'm saying. It's finding your niche.
Which takes you to the next elevation. Level.
That's right. And that's what he's done with the Gorillaz, because I think he'd done a tour with them recently. And, you know, you tour with somebody like that, it's a life-changing situation. You know what I'm saying? Financially, it's good, because obviously you're touring with a huge band. So, you know, if you can get yourself in that situation or that, you know, but he's had a couple of tunes that... That's what I'm saying, it's finding them tunes.
It's all that sweet moment.
Yeah, finding the tune, bruv.
How often do you go to studio?
Well, I've got a studio at home, so
it's daily.
It's like daily, I got a little studio at home, so daily I go in there.
How many tunes do you have on the go at once?
Maybe 3-4.
Really?
Yeah.
And you alternate per day?
Yeah, what I do is a lot of the time nowadays, I don't really create from scratch. Most of the tunes that I'm working on is people sending me beats.
Brilliant.
So people send me the beats. I don't like that one. I won't use it. If I like that one, I ask them what their budget is. If the budget is decent, I get to work. Get the money from them, start to write, send it back. 9 times out of 10, they like what I do.
Like, talk that shit.
9 times out of 10, sometimes, you know, you get a few that are picky. And I won't mention any names.
You know who you are.
Yeah, Dub Pistols.
Go on, Barry. Go on, give him some relay. Go on.
Hi, Barry. Some of them are, you know, you send them the idea, they send it back. You send them the idea, they send it back. But if they're paying, I don't mind. And then the next thing is to do then is to go into the studio with them, so they can tell me what they want.
Yeah.
There's no point in me creating and they don't like it, and creating and they don't like it. So next time I'll be there with you in the studio, so then you can tell me what you tell me what you want, bruv, and I'll execute it. So, but I do, that's at the moment, that's how I'm working. People send me beats, they send the budget, I write the songs, send it back to them. So it's easy. And, you know, sometimes you create, I do, you know, sometimes I do create from scratch, but it's not been recently. It's just been, it's like I'm doing, when I leave tomorrow to go to Jamaica, I'm going to go home to my house there and I'm going to just set up my studio there. So I'll have pretty much one of these, laptop, sound card, headphones, and a good mic. And then King Jammies, I'm doing an album with King Jammies from Jamaica. And so I'm going to just, I've done 2 tracks already.
Wow.
And he sent me, I don't know, about 15 or so rhythms. So I'm just going to go sit and write.
Wow.
Drink coconut water, eat good food, and sit and write.
Yeah, my heart bleeds for you.
It's wicked, isn't it? So it's terrible, isn't it? Never mind, mate. I'll leave you
In
the rain.
yeah. Save your ticket stubs or something. Yeah.
But yeah, but no, that's what I'm on next, bro. Writing, just gonna go write, sit, write, and that's how I do it.
Anyone you want to work with? Anyone that you know?
I'd like to work with Dr. Dre.
Yeah, that'd be good, wouldn't it?
That would be good if I could work with Dr. Dre.
Can you imagine that? That'd be so amazing. That'd be amazing. Right.
Yeah, because I know that obviously the beats will be good, and I know I can write, man. I know I can come up with something that will be epic.
What about Buster?
I'd love to write. I think I sent him a message, but I've not heard anything. But I know he's on tour or whatever.
Mm.
But yeah, it would be nice to work with Buster Rhymes, Dr. Dre.
That'd be crazy.
Sly Dunbar from Sly and Robbie.
Wow.
I know Robbie's gone now, but I'd like to work with
That'd
Sly.
That'd be incredible.
Who else? There's an artist from Jamaica called Agent Sasko.
Okay.
I'd like to voice a tune with him.
Wow.
If possible. Buju Banton would be nice to do a tune with.
Come on.
So if you're listening, Buju, come on, you know. Tip Irie, yeah. UK Godfather, Mwando, yeah. Link up and do a tune.
It must be really kind of, you know.
Yeah, it'd be nice to
Everyone knows
who Tip Irie
is, so it's like, you know, what? Was your no? Like, just, it's a knock situation, isn't it?
Well, some of them you knock and you ask them, you know, it's funny. Jamaica's strange, the respect. The respect is there from a lot of people, but a lot of the... This is why it kind of irritates me with the UK, because when we go to America and Jamaica, you know, they hear of us, but the respect is not... There's a few people that may give you that respect, but a lot of the radio and the... Maybe back in the day, I found... Back in the day, in the 80s, when I went over there, the radios then was very receptive. Maybe because Hello Darling was big.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that might have something to do with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But now I find there's people like Muta Baruka. There's a guy called Steve James in Jamaica. And a few people them that will play UK music. One and two. But a lot of the stations out there, you got to pay...
Pay to play.
Payola, okay. They call it.
Yeah.
But they don't really support our music.
And then,
what's it like for UK hip-hop in America?
Well, I mean...
Does it get played?
No, I don't...
There you go. No. So this is what I'm saying. But when these artists come to England...
Then it's fanfare.
It's pageantry. Fanfare, and everyone drops their diss and they're queuing up round the street and they did that. And some of these guys, you know, no disrespect, man, but I listen to some of the content. But that's what they're feeding the youths, them, the fuckery. You know what I mean?
Mm.
They're feeding the youth, them, and that's what they're getting to. Because obviously people want to, you know, people don't want to be, young kids don't want to be dancing to their granddad or whatever. I get that. But it's like, people are like sheep. People get into what they're fed. So if you feed them the shit, then that's what they're going to get into.
Yeah. I'd also say, just to add value to that, is, no, they don't want to be... At a certain age, they don't want to be dancing to the same things that their parents grew up on or what their parents are listening to now.
Yeah.
But inevitably, and this is the beauty of nostalgia, is what they're listening to now suddenly becomes dated and the things that their parents listen to suddenly becomes respected.
Yes.
And it's funny that, isn't it? So all of a sudden, the things that you may not have liked as a kid, you suddenly appreciate a lot more because it's got more longevity to it.
Yeah, but I find, you know, when I went to Mexico last week or the week, but I think 2 weeks ago, I was in Mexico.
Yeah, I remember, yeah.
Did a concert out there and there was about 800 people there, nice show. And then the other one was maybe about 300 people.
Mm.
And the show, there were kids there at the first show. And they were, you could just see them
loving it.
Loving the music. Something, look at that. You know, look how young they are. And they're getting into it. So I'm not saying that, you know, we just need to feed the youths them something of substance and they'll buy into it. And even at some of my shows, you know, people would come to my shows, parents come to my shows with their kids and they said, oh, my kids, they love this, you know, Tip. So I know if the youths then were fed the positive things, because I'm not just saying it from me. There's, you know, positive artists like Chronix and Protégé, I guess, and Lila Ike, and there's that crew, and Jesse Royal, and Taurus Riley, and all these, you know, kind of younger artists, and then younger than them still, you know what I mean? And you find they just promote the slackness and the gun lyrics and the killing and shooting and this and that, and they feed the youth.
It's all one dynamic, isn't it? It's one dimensional.
It's just boring, man. And they just feed that to the kids them, and that's what they grow up, you know. And the thing is, it's like an artist like Skeng. I don't know if you've heard of
him. Yeah.
Right? It's like they ain't even got respect for the people them that's coming to see them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And this is what's frustrating, because I see them, they come out and they're bossing the champagne and then majority and then dashing, they're taking Molly or what. It's up to you what you want to take. It's up to you. I don't know. It's not none of my business. If you want to do that, that's fine. It's up to you. Anybody can do whatever they want to do. But if somebody pays their good money, if they've just spent $22.50 to see you, bruv, at least sing the tune.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, at least sing the tune, because the second half of the tune might be your favourite part of the tune.
Yeah.
And you don't... And they come and they sing the chorus and maybe one verse, and then it's the next tune.
Yeah, it's telling of the scene that it's become.
And then it's like the sound system culture with, you know, it's like, okay, you go out with your missus and you want to hear a tune, so you play 20 seconds of a tune, and then you play the next tune, and then you play another 20 seconds, and then you play the next tune. So how are you supposed to dance to that then?
You can't get into a flow.
Well,
right?
If you go to Channel 1, my name's playing the tune, and you know, you're hearing the tune, and you just come to the second part of the tune. Okay, I like this part of the tune, it's nice. You know what I mean? And then, okay, I'm going to hear the version now. Okay, this feels good too. And then they play another tune. But if you're out and you want to dance with your missus, for instance, and they play a nice tune, you dance it with your girl, and, you know, you can't do that for 10 seconds.
No, can't get into the mindset. You can't get into the rhythm.
So that's why I can't really get into... It's change. No, I don't mind change, but, bruv, come on, man.
Change for the better. Yeah,
and to me, it's not. It's fuckery.
It's funny you say that. It's because I watched this Ice-T interview.
I like
the other
that
day.
Guy.
Yeah, he's fucking crazy.
That is one brother. You've just mentioned another brother that I'd like to just meet him.
Yeah.
Because
he's a case study. He's a case study in himself.
Yeah, him talk sense.
Yeah.
That's what I like about him. Him chat sense, and he's real.
Yeah.
And the real is not no... You know, you can tell the man's lived the thing.
Yes.
And him talk it, is, you know.
Just trust everything. So he's total trust in what he says. You know, he's lived life.
But anyway, you were saying Ice-T.
No, he's very much mirroring everything we just said there. And and he said that, you know, the levels in which we strive, and I say it collectively, we strive to perfect what we do, to pass on a kind of a sense of tradition and a code of this is how it's, you know, it's roadmaps of how you do things.
Yeah.
You want to pass on that knowledge, but when that knowledge isn't being fed through, it's quite heartbreaking, isn't it?
Yeah, it's depressing because, you know, somebody like Ice-T, you know that he comes from the streets. He doesn't pretty up where he's from.
No.
He knows what he's from. He knows where he's gone through. He knows what he's had to do to achieve. But there's a time when you got to be sensible.
Yeah.
And he knows, really, okay, I can make a, you know, I'm not an actor, but I've learned to become an actor.
Yes.
Because when you started beat bopping, you didn't just wake up one day and be the talent that you are now.
No.
You know,
think
and that's,
it through.
You have to think it through. But then you practice and practice and think, oh, that sounds good. You might have watched Dougie Fresh or whatever and learn and pick up bits and pieces and whatever, you know. But, and it's the same with me in my craft, you know what I mean? That's why, for me, it's like second nature. So sometimes my show, I don't have to think about it because I know the songs I'm going to do. Just go and do it.
The template's all there.
It's still there and it's in the head. So, you know, but it's, you know, I don't like the I don't like the shit, bruv, what they're feeding the youths them. And it's not a good example.
No.
You know what I mean?
But it also regionalizes as well. How's people meant to get international acclaim when they're just talking to the region? You know what I mean? Like, they're talking in this dialect that doesn't always translate past what for gap.
Well, there you go. So, and it's the same, you know, if you, you know, if certain artists, you might be big in your little...
Borough. Yeah.
Exactly. But we want to try to reach the massive. We want to try to, you know, so our little youths that are coming up and they see my man come out and in my dad's jumping and with the ear and they've paid, you know, and sometimes I think, good.
Yeah.
You know, it's all of them, because you people there, you're there, you spent your £22.50, your £25 to go and watch this stranger that
serves
you don't
you right,
know.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Serves you right. Yeah, because you ain't looking after your own.
Yeah.
You ain't coming to spend that money to see Tipperary or to see Rodney P or to see, you know, whoever. You know what I mean? You're spending to cut this guy that you don't know from Adam. Not to say that you can't embrace people's music, but, you know, Chronics makes good music.
Yeah.
So I pay my money and then I know he's going to turn up with his band and he's going to kill it and he's going to sing the tune from beginning to end. So that I can, you know, when I'm nodded, I can dare and I can feel the, you know, this is what I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? But when somebody's coming out and it's like, okay, well, what did you say?
Mm.
Okay, then. Well, ain't you going to sing that part of the tune then?
Mm.
Okay, then. All right. Next tune. Okay, then. And then he does the same again and then half an hour, they're gone.
Yeah.
And you've just spent £25-30 for, what was that? I've missed it.
Yeah, yeah. £8 a drink as well.
Yeah. So, I don't know, man. I'm just, you know, sometimes I just have to tell it how it is, bruv. I'm not impressed. You know, a lot of them, I'm just not impressed, man. It don't do nothing for me. You know, I'd rather go and, I don't know.
But you know how important it is for the likes of me and a lot of people who are watching is to know that you do feel that and that your moral compass is definitely set to, you know, integrity that you've helped forge. Like, we all want to believe in our artists,
you know,
right?
Look, I'm not, you know, you people have to have fun.
Yeah.
People come out to enjoy themselves.
Yeah.
So it's not about doom and gloom or conscious lyrics all the time. There's nothing wrong with party tunes and party thing, but do it with tastefully and respectfully, and don't diss women, because, you know, women are the mothers of creation, so we need to respect them and respect ourselves and respect each other. And a lot of these guys, them that's dealing with certain of the lyrics, them and whatever, they got mums and they got sisters. And how they're telling people to treat their, you know, women, they ain't going to want a man to be treating their sister like that.
Nah.
Or, sorry, I'm putting away from the mic. They ain't going to, you know, they ain't going to want nobody to diss their mum, and they ain't going to want nobody to disrespect their sister.
Mm-hmm.
So why are you pushing that narrative on the youths, them, to go and do that to somebody else's daughter? You know what I'm saying?
It resonates. So, it goes a long way.
So that's what I'm about, bro. I'm not in it. I'm not in it. I'm not gonna push that. You know, when you was young, you lick out against certain things. You know what I mean? And even now, you know, I just try to keep it real. I don't know about that word, but I just try to stay true to what I believe in. You know what I'm saying?
That's what people like about the Tipperary. What's your future then? So they've got the book. What else is going on?
My future's bright.
Yes. Which certainly starts orange. In Jamaica. Let's just start in Jamaica.
Brother, I've got two albums out right now. Yeah. One is called I'm an African.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's out right now. It's doing okay. You know what I mean? And then I've got one called The UK Dancehall Pioneer.
Wow.
You know, which is like a duet album with me and a lot of...
Collaborations. Oh, wow. That sounds awesome.
So I've got I'm an African is out now, and UK Dancehall Pioneer is out now. And I've got my book, Stick to My Roots, Tipperary Autobiography, is out now. If you want to find out anything about Tipper Irie, it's very simple. You just go to tipperirie.com. Yeah, you go to tipperirie.com and everything is there. Everything what I'm doing, the social media, the latest interviews, the latest albums, everything is at my website. You can just go to tipperirie.com. My next project is with King Jammies. He's given me some rhythms, so I'm going to go to Jamaica tomorrow to start to write. I've got loads of gigs coming in. Yay! I'm when I get back from Jamaica, I'm in the West End at Greek Street. I think it's called the House of Barnabas, but it's on the website. It's sold out, actually. It's a book meet and greet.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, wicked.
For my book. So yeah, that's happening. And then I have got, in July, I've got three festivals. One of them is called Reggae Summer Blast. One of them is Ipswich, Sunny Ipswich Festival. And another one is called the Fate Music Festival with Rampage. It's Tipper Irie and the band and Rampage.
Rampage, wow, yeah.
So I'm doing that.
There's some
so July is
well.
Coming in. Rampage. Things are coming in. I'm going to be at the Nottingham Club, Nottingham Theatre on the 13th of July. That just come in, actually. Wow. Playhouse, that's it. Nottingham Playhouse, 13th of July. Tipper Irie, Mikey Tough, Friendly Fire Band, live, and a load of whole other artists as well. So July is already stacked up.
Wow.
What else have I got? I'm going to be in Deal in February. That is on the coast somewhere. Deal, it's called D-E-A-L. Mm-hmm. Deal, the Lighthouse, that's it. I'm playing at the Lighthouse. Yeah, so look, loads of gigs are coming in. You know, that's what I'm on. The book's still out there. I'm going to be doing a lot of book meet and greets and just promotion, man. Just promote my albums that I've got out right now. That's it for the immediate, you know. So it's still active, bro.
Reputation for Seagem, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so
much respect, my brother. Much respect, man.
Oh, long overdue. Much respect. Yes, man. Absolute pleasure. Yeah, man. This lot are going to be gushing too. Man, wherever you are, make sure you go and check out some Tipper Irie in your life. There's loads of different varieties and means in which you can discover the talents. And whether it's audible, visible, or readable, it's all there. Killer Keller Podcast. Our lighting was out of fashion, all right, people? Remember, crime don't pay, but neither did A, all right? Don't talk to anyone I wouldn't. You stay lucky, people. Easy.
Peace.
Wow. That was a banger.
All right, brother.